The defendant just turned white because they're like, wait, what's on that tape? And sure enough, the judge, he cleared the court and he said, never do anything like this in a court of law again.
And on my copy of the witness list, the older sister's name appeared at the bottom. And at his copy of the witness list, it was not there. Can you guess what he had done?
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello and welcome to Best Case, Worst Case. This is Jim Clemente, retired FBI profiler, former New York City prosecutor and writer-producer on CBS's Criminal Minds. And with me today is...
Hi, everybody. It's Francie Hakes, former state and federal prosecutor and now big-time Hollywood producer. Or so I like to think in my own mind, Jim. But Jim, we're not together today.
Well, you're on the East Coast, sort of, and I'm on the West Coast, definitely.
I know.
So yeah, that would be not together. You're right.
No, I'm in XG Midwest visiting family for Christmas.
Where is that again? The middle of America?
The middle of America, believe it or not. Yes, where there's cold and snow and lots of people who look like they need some sunshine.
Yeah, sort of. I fit into that category all the time. Anyway, today... we're going to do sort of a holiday edition of Best Case, Worst Case. Sort of a not such a great case, but not a worst case, right?
Exactly. We're not going to do...
a little lighter fare for the holidays.
Yeah, I think maybe no murder and mayhem. What do you think about that?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, we'll talk about some interesting behavior that we've noticed from the other side of the bar.
That's right, Jim. One of my favorite topics is defense attorneys. And it's one of the things that us former prosecutors and our friends in law enforcement, like you, former agents and cops, it's one of the biggest topics of conversation while you're a prosecutor and after you're a prosecutor, because what happened to you in court this day, or you can't believe what this defense attorney did on that day, is a major topic over cocktails and coffee.
Well, so let's talk about that. Have you had instances in your legal career where defense attorneys did something outrageous or ridiculous during the course of a hearing or a trial?
I have, Jim. In fact, it's the number one episode, literally episode number one of Best Case, Worst Case, when I talked about a child who was being abused by her father, and that it was my first trial as a prosecutor in Columbus, Georgia. What I didn't really talk about very much was the defense attorney in that case, a man named Mike Garner. Mike Garner was kind of a legend in Columbus circles, and not in a good way. I didn't know any of that going into this case that my chief assistant district attorney slapped on my desk 2 weeks into my tenure there and said, you have 7 days to get ready for this trial. And the defense attorney is a guy named Mike Garner. But little did I know that this would be seriously a trial by fire for a young prosecutor, because Mike Garner was known, at least in our circles, as being someone who was maybe dancing on the wrong side of the ethical line.
Yeah, well, that is something that defense attorneys do, and many of them justify it by saying, well, their client is entitled to the best defense possible. That may be true, but it has to be within the law and should be within the ethical boundaries that the bar puts forth. And many times they don't do that. They completely obfuscate the rules and go for whatever the hell they want to do.
They really do, Jim. And for me, in this particular case, of course, I was 100% unprepared for this kind of defense attorney. I mean, let's be honest, I was unprepared for almost any kind of defense attorney because it was my very first case. And so what happened was this. In this particular child abuse case, there was an allegation that the defendant had abused his older stepdaughter, who was 10 or 12 years older than the primary child involved in the case that I was going to be trying. And so what this brought up was what in Georgia and in many other places is called similar transaction evidence. But in order to get similar transaction evidence admitted, you have to file a special notice with the court,
right,
and you have to provide the name of that witness on a witness list. And it was there that everything went crazy.
Really, what happened?
So you have to not only give that kind of a notification, but you also have to provide the name of the witness on the witness list. So we go into court. It's my very first trial. I've had a week to prepare. And we're trying the case. And as I talked about in episode one of Best Case, Worst Case, I mentioned that there was a recording of the child, something that's a child hearsay statement that gets admitted in these kind of cases, whether the child is going to testify or not. And I had just only had time to review that recording one time. And when the trial started, the first thing the defense attorney did was object to the similar transaction evidence. He claimed, Mike Garner claimed, that we, the district attorney's office, had not provided him notice of the older sister who was going to testify as a similar transaction witness. And his evidence for this, Jim, was a piece of paper that we had provided to him that literally was entitled witness list. And on my copy of the witness list, the older sister's name appeared at the bottom. And at his copy of the witness list, it was not there. Can you guess what he had done, in my opinion?
Redacted it?
Exactly. Whiteout, Jim. Remember whiteout? He used whiteout and then made a copy of it. And so he made it look as though the witness list the district attorney's office turned over did not have the name of that witness.
Yeah, that's a crime. He should be arrested for that. He actually doctored evidence and then made a false statement to the court? I mean, that guy should be disbarred and put in jail. That is an extreme, totally illegal thing for him to do, if that's what he did.
Well, and that's what he must have done, Jim. There's no other explanation for why his witness list didn't have the name on it, because the only copy the DA's office had ever provided to anyone had her name on it on the bottom. So he absolutely had to doctor it. And so the judge said, Ms. Hakes, you are not entitled to use this similar transaction evidence.
That's ridiculous. It's outrageous.
It is outrageous, but it was a big lesson for me, Jim, in dealing with skeevy defense attorney tactics. And it's sort of funny that you say that Mike Garner should have been arrested and thrown in jail, because it was only a few years later that the United States Attorney's Office in the Middle District of Georgia prosecuted him for some kind of drug trafficking prostitution scheme. And sadly, he was not convicted, but he did lose his bar license.
Well, good. But in this case, it's also a lesson. And I know that that lesson must have been learned by many other prosecutors before, because I remember when I was in the prosecutor's office in New York City, and when I was an FBI agent, we made sure that we kept a separate copy of everything that was transmitted to the defense, and would painstakingly go through it page by page with them and have them sign off that they received exactly what was in this copy, because there are plenty of defense attorneys who have done that forever. And again, it's illegal. There's no question about it. That is a crime. And to present themselves as a officer of the court and do something like that, it's just heinous.
Well, it is, Jim. And the worst part of it for me as a prosecutor and, you know, a human being in this case, what it meant was when that recording I mentioned earlier was played with the child's original hearsay statement to detectives, it had been almost 2 years pending this case. When her original statement was played for the court, I had completely forgotten that one of the things she said on the tape, that this happened to my sister too. He did it to my sister too. And of course, because that evidence had been ruled out because of the defense attorney's lies, he immediately moved for a mistrial, and the judge granted it right in the middle of my first trial.
Damn. Well, here's the thing. It gave you an opportunity to have your trial over again, and I'm assuming that the court allowed you to give him notice, and then you were allowed to actually put in all the evidence.
Oh, Jim, you know me so well. Not only did I then have time when the court rescheduled the case to provide him notice again, this time I was smarter. And forever after, I actually took the extra step of filing discovery with the court so that there was never going to be any argument that that defense attorney received the discovery and I could prosecute my case.
Well, I hope that you're going to tell me that you prosecuted that asshole and the lawyer was unsuccessful in defending him.
Oh, he was very unsuccessful, Jim. In fact, we convicted him of every count and he got a sentence of 50 years in prison. And you know what I call that, Jim. That's a pine box sentence because he came out of prison, I am proud to say, already in a pine box.
Well, you know, we've already discussed the death penalty and so forth. So we're not going to get into that right now, especially during these festive holidays. But I will say this. I hope that that guy losing his license was a lesson to him and to other lawyers around him. I mean, I don't have a problem with vigorously defending your client within the bounds of the law. But I have a tremendous problem with defense lawyers who deliberately lie, who deliberately hide evidence or change evidence, intimidate witnesses, make up completely fabricated stories that there's no evidence to back up so that they can create doubt. None of those things are part of a vigorous defense. The law should be followed in every case, and no lawyer should be lying in a court of law. Unfortunately, it happens every day.
It does. And so, Jim, I'm sure in your career, you must have had a similar experience with defense attorney antics that looking back on now, maybe you can laugh about, maybe it still makes you mad, but you had to have seen some outrageous conduct.
Well, I will say this, that there was a case, 3.5 month long trial, Red Rock Commodities, Menachem Prihar was the defendant. I had done a 19 month investigation and took down this corporation because of 10 different fraudulent schemes that were going on, bank and government fraud, to the tune of $480 million. And during that trial, we know that the defense attorneys did some really shifty things. For example, I had traveled to Israel during this investigation because that's where the defendant was originally from. And I went to get documents and do some investigations about the port. And, you know, the port of entry is, it's got a whole different legal entity kind of assigned to it. And when something comes off a ship, it's kept in the port. And until it passes through that port, it hasn't actually arrived in that country. And so this defendant was using that limbo time to actually manipulate documents and pretend that things were in the country when they weren't and doing all sorts of schemes. So I had to get a whole bunch of documents and they had to do with steel that was stored there and wheat that was stored there and all sorts of things. And it's a rather laborious process. But I did it and I came back and we put those documents into evidence at trial. And when we did, the defense attorney, one of the five defense attorneys that this guy hired that were all working at the same time, came up to the prosecutor and said, "Wait a minute, I didn't know you can get foreign business documents admitted into trial." And he said, "Oh yeah, you have to follow this such and such a rule." He's like, "Oh," and he walks away. 2 weeks later, they show up with a stack of documents. They say came from another country. And these documents were contracts that seemed to undermine all of the charges in this case, that these documents actually proved that the documents we had, the government had, collected during the course of the investigation and during the search when we took down the organization, that they were not accurate. And they have to, the defense, before they're putting them into evidence, has to hand a copy to the prosecution. So they did. And it had this nice little blue ribbon that they put around it, just like the documents I had put in. And they said, "These are the documents that we're going to introduce." And one of the five prosecutors that we had on our side turned to me and said, "Jim, you told me these documents didn't exist." And I said, "Mark," it's Mark Stein, "I did say they didn't exist." And until 2 weeks ago, when you told the defense attorney that you can put in foreign documents, they didn't exist. They created them in the last 2 weeks. And you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to take these to the lab right now, and we're going to ink date them. And we're going to find out when they were signed.
Y'all, tis the season to get cozy, and there's no better place to snuggle up with a good book and a warm drink than your very own home. Or maybe you're hosting holiday hangs. Your furniture should suit your needs, but also feel uniquely you. That's where Joybird comes in. With Joybird, your personal one-of-a-kind style should match your furniture. Bring your mood boards to life with hundreds of customizable pieces and over 50 fabric options. Whether you're more of a neutral beige or a bubblegum pink person, it's built by us but created by you. Do you need a sofa in a golden hue or a love seat in the hottest red, maybe an inviting baby blue or even a plush green velvet? Joybird's got your back. Joybird offers a range of kid and pet-friendly upholstery options so your creations can stand the test of time and the wrath of your furry friends and toddlers. There are free fabric swatch kits available to let you see and touch all our fabrics and help you make the perfect choice. There are also free personal design consultants to help you go from inspiration to creation. There's a 365-day home trial, so you can skip the furniture store and bring the showroom home to you. Sit on it, sleep on it, break it in. If you don't love your Joybird, return it. There are free returns within 2 weeks of delivery. Create furniture that matches your own fearless style at joybird.com/bestcase. See how Joybird can help make your dream space a reality today at joybird.com/bestcase. Go to joybird.com/bestcase and receive an exclusive offer for 25% off your first order by using the code BESTCASE. Y'all, let's get real. Between hitting the gym, eating cleaner, or learning a new skill, there are a lot of ways we can all better ourselves in the new year. I can't think of one that's more important than starting the year off by tackling your high-interest credit card debt. Our friends at Upstart.com are here to help. Upstart is the revolutionary lending platform that offers smarter rates to help you pay off those high-interest credit card debt, especially the ones you accrued around the holidays. Upstart goes beyond the traditional credit score when assessing your credit worthiness. They actually reward you based on your education and job history in the form of a smarter rate. Upstart believes you're more than just your credit score. They believe in you, and they make it fast, simple, and easy to check your rate. Since it's just a soft pull, it won't affect your credit score. The hard pull happens if you accept your rate. And the best part, once the loan is approved and accepted, most people get their funds the very next business day. Y'all, the next day. See why Upstart is ranked number one in their category with over 300 businesses on Trustpilot. And hurry to upstart.com/bestcase to find out how low your Upstart rate is. Checking your rate only takes a few minutes. That's upstart.com/bestcase.
And he said, oh, okay, great. And you know what? For some reason, the defense never moved to put those documents into evidence. Can you understand why, Francis?
Well, gee, Jim, I think I have an idea.
Now, yeah, so at the time, yeah, of course, we couldn't ink date documents, but I said it loud enough for everybody at the defense table to hear me, and they no longer even attempted to put those documents in, because in fact, they were fraudulent. However, we had copies of them, so now what I could do is actually do a forensic analysis of these documents. And we hired a former Treasury agent to do sort of handwriting analysis and document analysis. And I did my own on the side. And it turns out that this document analyzer and I came to the same conclusion, that the signatures on these documents were actually cutouts and hand-placed onto the signature line and then Xeroxed into place. And so he testified that there were actually never any originals of these documents, that they were cut and paste from two different documents. And he said the only one that's an anomaly is this one. Every other one has exactly the same signature. There is no variation, period. And he said the only one is this one. And he said, I can't explain why. And I said, I can, when he came off the stand, because when he put the signature, there was a J that broke through the line. So every time you could see that there's a little white on either side of that black line that crosses the signature line when he writes the J, right? You can see that, and that's one of the reasons why you could prove that it was a Xerox. But if you, sometimes when you put your piece of paper on the Xerox machine and you hold it with your hands, you shift it slightly. And what happened was the bottom part of the J got bent when they shifted the paper slightly. And so that was the only one that had any variation at all in the signature. So he was like, you're right, that's great. And so anyway, we were able then to put him on as our second to last witness to show what the defense tried to do to defraud the court. And boy, did that piss off the judge. And you know who it pissed off more? The jury. So there's that. And later in that case, I also took the stand. I was the last witness to take the stand. And the defense tried a number of times to trip me up. And for example, there was a fake business address that the defendant used on a huge bank loan. And of course, when they tried to collect, the business didn't exist. Why? Because the address didn't exist. And they said, oh, yes, it does exist. It's over here. You know, it's in Brooklyn, whatever. And I said, interesting. How did they manage that? Because it was an address in Brooklyn, and it had a street number and a street name and a zip code. And I went to that street number and street name in that zip code. And it was actually smack dab in the middle of a cemetery. I mean, the cemetery had been there for 200 years. There's a one road that tees to one side of the cemetery, and it continues on the other side of the cemetery. But since it skipped about five blocks of streets, the numbers also skipped. So all the numbers in between were just non-existent on this particular street. And so the lawyer, thinking he's going to trip me up, says, well, how do you know that that address doesn't exist? And I said, because I went to the street and I found the cemetery and I saw that there was no residence or office with that street number. And he said, well, you went to one end of the street and then you went to the other end of the street, but you didn't walk through that entire cemetery. And I said, that's where you're wrong. Actually, I did walk from one end of that cemetery to the other end of that cemetery to make sure that there weren't any maintenance buildings, offices, mausoleums, or anything in between that could possibly have that address. I walked the entire length of that cemetery, and I had the caretaker of the cemetery with me so he can come in and testify and verify what I just said. And you see this, the boiling of the blood of this defense attorney, because he literally thought he would embarrass me in front of the jury. And then he tried a couple of other things to trip me up during the course of my 1 week on cross-examination in that trial. And both times he tried, I was able to kind of turn it on him and sort of make the jury laugh at him. And after the trial, it was probably the best compliment I've ever had, was when that particular defense attorney came up to me and said, he said, what, did you take every course that the FBI gave on how to testify properly? And I said, actually, I didn't take any courses. And he said, then how did you do what you did to us? And I said, I don't know, maybe it's because I went to the same law school as you. And he goes, you went to Fordham Law? And I said, yeah. Like, I just assumed that they did every bit of background on me they possibly could have, but they never did. So he didn't even know I was a lawyer. So he played all those tricks, you know, leading it down the garden path and lowering your guard, letting your defenses down, all those things that they do to try to sort of mislead you to where they're going. I mean, I recognized it every time. And so I was very alert and aware. And one thing that I found when I testified is that if a defense attorney had the nerve to accuse me of doing something wrong that I didn't do wrong or undermine my credibility, I found that my back got up and my senses just were heightened. And I was in this hyper state where I could think incredibly fast, recall minute details, and I was able to overcome any attack after that. So pissing me off is the worst thing they could possibly do. And in fact, one judge, I was in somewhere in the middle of America there in a local court, and the judge stopped me and said, Agent Clementi, could you please take it easy on this lawyer? I was like, okay, Your Honor, I'm sorry. I didn't realize I was ganging up. But yeah, so that was probably my most egregious example of how defense attorneys would do things that are literally not just defense attorney antics, but things that actually go across the line into illegal behavior. But in this case, that was with me. And at the time, I was an FBI agent and I was sitting at the prosecution table because I was the case agent in the case. But they did something else, these defense attorneys, and it would end up backfiring on them as well. And what happened was we put on our star witness. This was the vice president of the company, and he was testifying against the president and CEO of the company. And during the course of me listening to tapes that were recorded by the defendant of his offices all the time, every phone was always recorded, and he knew it. There were a lot of criminal conversations on those tapes. He just never thought anybody would ever get them. But during the course of that, I found that this witness called his wife up from his office and said, I'm going to be working late. And then he called another woman and said he'd meet her at a hotel. And that is an indicator that this witness has a history of lying. I had to turn that over to the defense. And we didn't even find it until he was actually already on the stand, because I had 22,000 hours of tape to listen to and only a few months to actually go through it. So I couldn't actually go through the whole thing before the trial, but I continued going through it at night after we finished with court. So much so that many times I slept on the floor of that overhear room because I wanted to get through as much of this tape as possible. Anyway, I found this conversation. I had to disclose it to the defense. We did that. They wanted to use it against him. And what I didn't know was they had something else in their back pocket. And that was when he was on the stand, they wanted to play a recording. They played a recording. It was a couple of seconds. And they said, is that your voice? And he said, it doesn't sound like my voice to me. And they said, did you not meet with so-and-so at such-and-such a hotel at such-and-such a time on such-and-such a date? And did you not agree to refrain from testifying in this case for $250,000? And his response was, I don't remember that. Oh my God, I don't remember that. I don't remember that. It's not, no, I never did anything like that. So we were worried. And prosecution had to immediately distance themselves from the witness and all that stuff. And I said to the prosecutor, get me that original tape. Got the tape from the judge so we can make copies. What I did was I got on a plane. I flew to Washington, D.C. I went to the FBI headquarters and the audio lab, and I had them go through the tape, make copies, then go through the tape and enhance it. And then I flew back to New York City, and overnight, I stayed up and did 99 pages of transcripts. And wouldn't you know it, on the second to last page of this transcript, of this tape.
Oh, Jim, I think I have a guess, but I'm not going to make it.
There's a phone ringing, and the guy tells this witness, turn the TV up all the way. And he does, and you hear the TV volume go up all the way. And then he says, hello, Menachem. Yes, yes, our guest is still here. Hello, hello? And then he turns to the witness and says, he hung up. Well, that was it. Menachem was the name of the defendant in this particular trial. He was in MCC, the same place Jeffrey Epstein killed himself, or did he? That's where this defendant was. And he called from there to check on the status of their guest. And that guest was somebody who was being bribed. So the next day, when the defense attorney said that wanted to admit this tape and the transcript, this 8 pages that they wanted to submit, the prosecutor stood up and said, oh, Your Honor, we have no problem admitting that tape, but here's a full transcript. We want this marked for identification and entered into evidence. And you should have seen the defense attorneys and the defendant just turn white, because they're like, wait, what's on that tape? And sure enough, the judge, he cleared the court. He sent the jury into the jury room for a little while. And he said to the defense attorneys and to the defendant. This is something that I anticipated because who else would benefit from this witness not testifying but the defendant in this case? This was a very dangerous tack to take. And he turns to the lawyers and says, learn from this. Never do anything like this in a court of law again. And then he turns to the defendant. And when this case is over, I'm certain I'm going to see you again. So it was great. And so multiple attempts on their part to intimidate witnesses and to try to prevent valid evidence from coming in or create fake evidence and put that in failed miserably. The defendant was convicted and he got the longest white collar sentence in the history of the Southern District at that time. So it was good to see justice prevail, even in the face of such blatant shenanigans, as you might want to call it.
Well, Jim, it's so true. I mean, shenanigans is a great word for it. I mean, illegal behavior is another phrase. But you're absolutely right that this kind of tactic, these kinds of tricks, this kind of falsehood that is perpetrated by defense attorneys is happening all the time, sadly. And it's something that I experience routinely as a prosecutor, as both a state and federal prosecutor. And it's one of the hardest things to deal with as a prosecutor because you feel very much like we are under scrutiny and should be, and I accept and welcomed that. So we're under scrutiny in a way that defense attorneys aren't. And the standard that applies to the prosecutors, or at least it's supposed to apply to the good guys, does not apply to the bad guys. And it's one of those continuing frustrations. And I'm wondering, Jim, whether you and I shouldn't now think about a new segment. We have worst case scenario. We have breaking the case. Maybe it's time we had trial follies, because I have a feeling we have plenty.
I don't know about trial follies, Francie, but how about bad bar behavior?
Love it.
We'll add that to our repertoire with best case, worst case cases. And with worst case scenarios, we'll now add bad bar behavior.
We have plenty to talk about there, Jim.
Don't we, though?
Well, Jim, I know we're not going to be together here for the holidays, so I want to wish you and your family and all our listeners happy holidays and Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. I hope it is a safe and prosperous holiday season for everyone.
Yeah, I join in on that. Whatever holidays you are celebrating, please be safe and appreciate your family and friends. They're kind of great. And till next time, signing off on Best Case, Worst Case.
Best Case, Worst Case is an XG production. Produced by Jim Clementi at Empire Studios, LA. Engineered and edited by Mike Thal. Music composed and performed by Simba Tsumba. And hosted by Wonder.
You can listen to Best Case, Worst Case on your favorite listening app. We are on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
If you want to do something about child sexual abuse, Darkness Delight can help. Did you know that more than 90% of the time children are sexually abused by someone they know?
Jim, this isn't about stranger danger. It's about learning the true risks. Darkness to Light's training can help prevent, recognize, and react to child sexual abuse in your community.
When you make the decision to get involved, kids can be protected. It starts with you.
Visit www.d2l.org to take the training and learn more.
That's d2l.org.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.